Well, hello everyone and welcome to Back Porch Bluegrass. I'm your host Paul Trenwith, and if you stay around for the next hour, you'll hear some great bluegrass music and some from the vaults and some newer stuff. And today I have with me my friend mandolin playing friend and luthier Keith McMillan, and I'll be talking to him about things that interest him in the music. Hello, Keith.
G'day, Paul. How are you?
Yeah, great. Good to have you sitting here, and we're going to ask each other difficult questions and see what sort of answers we come up with. Hope you're going to enjoy your time on the program. We're going out, and a lot of people will be listening to us, so you better make your answers really good.
I'll try.
Okay, let's hear the rest a little bit more of this tune. This is Back Porch Bluegrass. Colleen Trenwith playing fiddle, me on banjo, and it's a good tune. That's tune Back Porch Bluegrass, Keith. How long have you been playing bluegrass music?
Really, kind of seriously since about 1980, I suppose. Semi-seriously.
As what else can you do here, yes.
Yeah. I first became aware of bluegrass listening to good old Hamilton County Bluegrass Band in the late 60s.
Yeah, I learned a lot from them too.
Yeah. And I tore off down to a music shop and bought a mandolin and used it kind of within a rock band context briefly until I realised I was useless at it and then played really in rock bands.
Right.
After that for a good few years.
On mandolin or on guitar?
On bass.
On bass, right, yeah.
Yeah, bass and drums.
Yeah.
It's
Why did mandolin appeal to you at first?
It just did. I don't know. And also because Shearer's Music Shop didn't have a banjo.
And, that's all right. That's perfectly all right. I'm very glad that you did. You do some nice things on mandolin. You're pretty much self-taught. I'm going to play a tune of yours from the 2016 album These Old Hands with the Hamilton County Bluegrass Band. And you wrote this tune called Hickawai Hornpipe. And it's not the normal sort of bluegrass mandolin tune, but it's a deep tune.
No, the intention was to make it a flat-out traditional mandolin tune, and it didn't come out that way. It really has a bit more of a kind of an Irish influence.
And I quite like that, and so we'll hear it. What am I doing here, shifting stuff around? I've got These Old Hands lined up, and we'll have a listen to it. Let's see y'all. Thank you. that's a Hickaway hornpipe, but it's a great tune. When we've played that, people say, that's a neat tune.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking of motorbike trips on backcountry roads at the time.
Well, you do a bit of that, don't you?
I do. I've just got back from a few days, more or less, going around the bottom half of the North Island.
What sort of motorbike?
Oh, it's a BMW sort of adventure bike.
Yeah. Adventure bike. that doesn't describe it very well to people like me.
It's a sort of a cross between a road motorbike and an off-road motorbike. It's still quite big, but it loves gravel and backcountry.
Oh, okay. And I think you've been on all the roads in New Zealand. Is that correct?
Yeah, or I don't know. Some of them.
Yeah.
Every now and then I see an interesting looking one I don't know about.
Yeah, right. Now, your daytime life is as a luthier and mostly repairing and setting up musical instruments. And you work out of Frankton, which is sort of part of Hamilton. And would you like to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I started building instruments seriously back in about the late 70s, 1980 or something like that. And I enjoyed it so much. Excuse me, that I started repairing instruments for the local music shops. And then when I felt my career at the museum had come to a halt 30 years ago, I set up a shop as a luthier, and I've been doing it ever since.
I think there's a anniversary.
Yesterday was 30 years since I wrote my first invoice out.
Hey, that's really cool.
Yeah,
hey.
And it was for $20.
Yeah. So you're still in business now. What sort of work mostly do you get in?
It's almost all repair work and restorations. It ranges from, you know, restringing guitars to repairing double basses that have been smashed while travelling on the back of a ute.
Mm, yeah, right. Yeah. A big range of stuff. And you also sell instruments secondhand and a small range of new instruments.
Yeah, I have a small shop and I'm a small-time retailer.
Yeah. I know when Keith plays mandolin now in the Hamilton County Bluegrass Band and plays mandolin and banjo in a band called Real Men, which I play bass for, and is known round town as a mandolin player. But when, as part of the Hamilton County Bluegrass Band, we travelled to White Cliffs, Australia, to play at an Outback Music Festival a couple of years ago. And when we do workshops at festivals like that, I like to think of the workshop as being something special and something a little bit different. And we did a workshop on how to set up your instrument. I remember you took some tools and it was really good fun. Yeah,
everybody rocked up with their banjos and ukuleles and guitars, and I did just 5 minutes of adjustments on each one, and you should have seen the smiles on people's faces as their instruments suddenly felt twice as good to play.
I'm constantly amazed that we spend so long playing an instrument that is not set up as well as it could be, and you struggle with making chords or the height of the strings or the spacing, and they're all things that can be altered and made right so it works for you.
And it's cheap. It really is cheap. I guess it's part of retailing being squeezed, that the regular music shops struggle to make enough money on the instruments to include setting it up properly as part of the price.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
So that becomes a job for me.
I'm amazed as a teacher, you know, people will come with all sorts of instruments and invariably they get sent to you to say, hey, this needs setting up. Keith knows what to do, set up this banjo so it becomes very playable, and that's the way, that's what we do.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, now back to a little bit of bluegrass. There's a bluegrass tune, and I've got it lined up now, which we're going to play it in. It looks like in CD2, and this is the classic bluegrass instrumental that these days it's one of these. Don't play it too fast. It's a tune called Rawhide, written by Mr. Bill Munro, and the version that I have is off the album Bill Munro and His Bluegrass Boys Bluegrass Instrumentals, and it's an assemblage of instrumentals over decade, and this is the 1951 version of Rawhide.
I love this tune so much. This is a tune that every mandolin player needs to know, and most of them do. It's just a classic.
It's just a world apart from most mandolin playing. At the time, you can see why this was a staggering and exciting new music. He plays with so much energy in the piece. And conveys that through the little mandolin, you know. And most people think the mandolin's quite sort of cute and plays nice tunes. This is just aggro mandolin.
Yeah.
And real speed. Let's have a listen to Bill Munro playing Rawhide. Isn't that great mandolin playing?
Fantastic.
Yeah, so much energy in the instrument. I remember the first time I went to the USA to watch bluegrass music, I was so impressed at the control that the mandolin had in the bluegrass band. Up till then, I'd been rather banjo-centred and vocal-centred, you know, because that was what it was about, and mandolin and fiddle and that played breaks and contributed the music. But when I watched bands, I realised that the mandolin was a rhythm controller. Amazing, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right.
I'd like to play a little bit more music. Now, you're listening to Back Porch Bluegrass with Paul Treadworth and today with Keith McMillan. And we're talking to Keith about his mandolin playing and his work as a luthier and just general opinions around the music world. And I'd like to say a big hello to all the people listening on Access Radio throughout New Zealand, and to the people now listening on Bluegrass Planet Radio in the USA. Thank you very much for having me as part of your shows, and to all the people at CFBX Kamloops in British Columbia, Canada. They're also part of our Access Radio scheme, and they'll be listening too at some stage. So thanks very much. I hope you're enjoying a look at bluegrass from the South Pacific, which is really what it is.
A distant look.
Now, I know you're a fan of David Grisman's, and you've watched him play and talked to him.
I went to a festival in Louisville, Kentucky, really primarily because David Grisman was one of the major guests there, and I met him and I had breakfast with him, and I really enjoyed it.
I even had
a jam with him.
Yeah, well, I know that. I didn't know all that much about David Grisman's music, but one time when I was in San Francisco, he and his band, the David Grisman Experience, were playing at the Freight and Salvage in Berkeley, and I thought, I need to go and see this concert. And I went to see it. It was a wonderful concert, and I bought the album, so to speak. I'm going to play a couple of tracks off this album, Keith. The first one is a great old tune called I'm Rolling On, which starts with some classic mandolin playing, and the next one is one of your favorites, Old and In the Way, and that's his current band doing that great tune. So let's listen to some David Grisman, I'm Rolling On.
In the Southland, just sitting in a chair with one arm around my old guitar and the other around your dear. I'm rolling on,
I'm rolling on,
I'm rolling on,
I'm rolling on,
I'm rolling on through life, just rolling on. Whether I'm in the country, whether I'm in the town, I've always got my old guitar, whether I'm up or down. I'm rolling on,
I'm rolling on,
I'm rolling on,
I'm rolling on,
I'm rolling on through life, just rolling on. I'm sitting in the moonlight, as blue as I can be, strumming on my guitar to give my poor hearties. I'm rolling on,
I'm rolling on,
I'm rolling on,
I'm rolling on,
I'm rolling on through life, just rolling on. Well, maybe someday I'll marry if I can find the gal. I'll always love my old guitar as much as I love her. I'm rolling on,
I'm rolling on,
I'm rolling on,
I'm rolling on,
I'm rolling on through life, just rolling on. I wish I was in the Southland, sitting in a chair, one arm around my old guitar and the other around a deer. I'm rolling on,
I'm rolling on,
I'm rolling on,
I'm rolling on,
I'm rolling on through life, just rolling on. I'm rolling on,
I'm rolling on,
I'm rolling on,
I'm rolling on,
I'm rolling on through life, just rolling on. I'm rolling on,
I'm rolling on,
I'm rolling on,
I'm rolling on,
I'm rolling on through life, just rolling on.
That's what I heard him say.
They used to heed the words he said, but that was yesterday. Old will turn to gray and youth will fade away. They'll never care about you, call you old and in the way. Share of friends and good times. Now the friends have all passed on. Through the streets he walks along. Like the old dog gone astray, he's just old and in the way. Old and in the way, that's what I heard him say. They used to heed the words he said, but that was yesterday. Old will turn to gray and youth will fade away. They'll never care about you, call you old and in the way.
That will have brought back some memories, Keith.
Yeah, it certainly did. By the late 70s, I'd kind of got over rock music and discovered folk music within the folk club context in Hamilton. And I remember one night I'd been listening to this record of an Irish band called Planxty, and some people were jamming around at this party, and I thought, shit, I can remember this tune. And it was Dennis Murphy's polka. So I raced out into a bedroom and grabbed my mandolin and spent 2 minutes learning this tune and went back and played this tune at this party. And after that, I was a mandolin player in the folk club.
That's good. I know even now you have the ear for listening to the tune and finding the notes of the tune. I still have to puzzle through that process.
I think if you were a mandolin player, you'd find it much easier, because one of the things about mandolin is the whole tuning and the layout of the thing is designed to make playing tunes intuitive.
Well, actually, you've told me that before, and I have found that some things do sit very comfortably on mandolin, and although my fingers aren't very fast at getting the notes, they are good to find.
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, you do get that ability to just kind of think of a phrase and out it pops.
Yeah, and very very versatile instrument. That's a great segue into what I'm going to play now, actually, which you don't know what I'm going to play, but it because it's so good at stating the lead notes and taking a melody and playing it. It's used for a variety of stuff. I mean, I love it, like in that I'm Rolling On, where David Grisman just played the tune real straight, and then you do other sort of bouncier, slightly jazzier bluegrass. But we're going to hear from Emery Lester now, from his Pale Rider album, and it's an old jazz tune, Gershwin tune, I think, called Lady Be Good. You know, these guys just play the heck out of the mandolin, and it just sounds perfect. Let's have a listen. Well, how about that for some pretty hot playing?
That was fantastic.
Could you set up my mandolin so it sounded like that?
Yeah, easy. I did the other day, didn't I?
I took it home and it still didn't sound like that.
bring it back, I'll try again.
Yeah. Those guys just managed to get some superb stuff out of their instruments, and I'm not quite sure how they do it. It's left-hand timing as well as right-hand timing.
I think it might be talent.
I think it is. That mystery ingredient, isn't it? Sometimes, because I've talked to musicians and sort of handled the instruments, you know, and think, well, it just feels like a mandolin, you know, and it doesn't feel any different. And when he touches it, all these notes pour out of it, you know. There's a young talent called Sierra Hull. Oh, she's now early 20s, I suspect, but from about the age of 10, she was an astonishing mandolin player. And she has a fluidity in her playing that I just can't believe. And I've watched her play, and she's just a delightful young lady whose fingers have sort of CNC operated timing, you know, between her hands, and every note that she touches is perfect and perfect timing, and it flows like you would not believe.
It just looks so effortless, doesn't it?
Yes, and you think how come she has managed to draw that out of the music, because she has had the same influences as, say, that any other musician has had, and she's managed to draw out this amazing talent of playing mandolin. Let's hear a track. What have I got sorted out? A track called Bombshell from her Daybreak album. Let's listen to Sierra Hull playing some mandolin. Thank you. That was Sierra Hull playing Bombshell and featuring some her brilliant mandolin playing. We're listening to Back Porch Bluegrass with me, Paul Trendworth, and my guest today is Keith McMillan, and we're talking about mandolins, and that's why there's sort of a slight leaning towards mandolin music in what I'm playing, although we probably get a fair amount of mandolin anyway.
Yeah.
Keith is a luthier. Keith, I've got an old guitar that probably has served me very well but needs a setup. What sort of thing do you do when someone brings in their favourite guitar and says, look, can you make this better for me and a bit easier to play? It's quite chunky. And what sort of things do you do to guitars?
Okay, well, the first thing I need to find out is how it's played, because some people play heavily and hard and require the strings to be a little further away from the frets, or we call it a higher action. So I establish what's going to be required, and then I look at the guitar. So the first thing is to see how straight the neck is, and on most guitars that's adjustable. In the case of Paul's good old Martin D21,
yes,
it's old enough that it doesn't have a truss rod within the neck, and so to change the shape of the neck, we have to get a bit more serious, but it can still be done. So in the case of Paul's guitar, the neck was, you know, within, it was okay. It was a little too curved, but not too bad. The next thing is we look at the nut, which is the white, usually bone thing, piece of material down by the tuners with six grooves in it. And the most common problem with guitars, especially when they're new, is that the strings at that point are too high. So I'll use special files and adjust the height of those grooves to bring them down to where they should be. And then finally, I'll adjust at the other end. There's a bone or plastic piece on the bridge that's called the saddle. And I'll bring that down to the correct height. And then while I'm doing that, I'll move the bridging point of the string to make the strings themselves play more in tune as you play notes further up the neck.
Right.
So that's the whole process. That's what we call
it. It's aligning the strings over the top of the fretboard, really, so that they all play accurately with a correct amount of comfort, I suppose.
Yes, exactly. Mm. The strings should, they obviously get higher as you go further up the fingerboard, yeah, but they remain just as easy to play.
Yes.
On a well set up guitar.
I notice there's probably a standard width for the strings across the zero fret or the first fret, but there's a lot of variation. Like nylon strung guitars are quite wide, steel strung guitars can be quite narrow, and somewhere in between usually feels better.
Yeah, most guitars are 43 millimeters steel string guitars at the nut. And that's okay for most people if the strings were as ideally spaced as they should be. But sometimes the outside strings are far too far from the edge of the fingerboard.
Oh, yeah.
And that means the whole thing's got a bit squeezed up, and we can achieve major miracles just by putting a new nut on with a better string spacing.
I know we've already done that many years ago on my Martin, and I think we cribbed about another 2 millimetres, and it made a huge difference.
Yeah.
And the string spacing, as your fingers get older and fatter and slower, and
These days it's more common for guitars to be just a 1/16th of an inch or 1.5 millimeters wider at the nut, which accommodates our aging fingers.
Yeah, right. What about there's, you walk into a music shop and there's 40 different types of guitar string available, and you've usually got your favourites, but how do you determine what strings are right for your guitar?
Well, try them.
Yeah,
And it's true that some strings suit some guitars. I had a Taylor that I just could not make sound good until I put a particular set of strings on it, and then it just came alive and it became the guitar it should have been. It made so much difference.
Right. The long-lasting strings appeal to lots of people. Do they really last longer, or do they sound better, or what's the story?
Yes, they do last longer, 2 to 3 times longer. And on most guitars, they also sound exceptionally good.
Yeah.
Not on all guitars.
Okay.
You know, sometimes they're not the answer.
Okay. With older guitars, and you know, there's lots of people my age that have had a guitar that they bought in their 20s, so the guitar's been around, you know, 40, 50 years, and that sort of thing. Tuning pegs and things like that, do you upgrade them with replacement pegs, and that makes a difference?
A little bit of oil makes a huge amount of difference. tuning machines don't give half of the trouble that they get blamed for.
Right.
They're usually just misunderstood more than anything.
Yeah, okay.
But sometimes they're simply worn out too.
Yes, yeah.
And we replace them.
Okay. So I bring my guitar into you and say, look, I just need it to play a bit more easily. You'll take it off me and then do some work on it. And how long before you give it back and say, this should be better?
A setup, which is what we've been talking about, that would normally be 2 or 3 days. It's pretty fast turnaround.
Yeah.
And no matter how much work people like me have stacked up out the back, setups still have to come and go pretty fast because
yes.
Everybody needs their guitar and it's a minor job after all.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so you always try and do it. And, you know, it's not, but you do the same thing for electrics, is it? Finer work for electrics because people are fussier because they spend more time playing notes up the neck?
You can usually get away with a little lower action on an electric guitar, but otherwise it's exactly the same.
The same sort of process.
Yep, exactly.
More nuts, more screws and more mechanical on an electric guitar.
On an electric guitar you can always get the intonation much more perfect because every string is individually adjustable.
Yeah,
but you know it doesn't matter as much as all that probably.
Yeah, great. Now the new guitars and the new cheaper guitars that are coming out are just so much better than they were 40 years ago.
That's absolutely true.
Yeah,
$300-$500 buys you a guitar now that is good enough to last for forever.
Yeah, yeah, perfectly and playable, and
let alone you know $1,000-$1,500 guitars. They're just a miracle.
Yeah, right. Ah, good. Let's have a little bit of music. This is a music program, but it's very interesting talking to Keith. He has done a lot on my instruments. It is very good having a friend who can fix instruments and nothing is a real problem. I've got a track sorted out here, and I'm going to play it for you. It's from one of my favourite bands, Keith, Nashville Bluegrass Band, and Mike Compton. Now, we've talked to Mike Compton.
We have, yeah. We've hung out with Mike.
Yes, yeah, and he's a all-round nice guy, and I love his approach to mandolin playing. He said it's all about down, up, down, up, down, up, down, up, and if you can get all the down-ups right and stick to that, he said you'll find that the playing really comes good, and that's really affected my playing at my slightly blundering level, but, you know, it really did make a difference as to how I get the notes. Talking about that there, but this tune here is one called Pretty Red Lips, and I reckon we ought to learn it. It's a great tune. Have a listen.
kisses are sweeter than candy, and I love to see her swiveling hips. Oh boy, ain't she a dandy.
Pretty Red Lips, didn't it? Great tune. Lovely rhythm to the playing, isn't it?
Very pretty, very lovely.
Had any really interesting jobs in your luthery shop? That's a difficult question.
That is a difficult question.
I didn't warn you. I say that because I love going there, and in your back room you've got all sorts of mystery instruments, and I know I've been there when you had a double bass on the operating table, so if I, you know, with the back off it, and it's a 100-year-old bass and things like that, that's what I call interesting.
Yeah, I had a double bass that was completely borrow-ridden and about 200 years old, and I had to restore that. That was interesting.
Yeah.
And at the moment, it's all pretty mundane stuff.
Yeah. So you get a school lot of 20 violins and you have to make them all work again. Yeah.
At the moment, I've got 3 cellos and a budget of $1,000 to do what I can.
To make them all good.
To make them all good. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And are they school instruments?
That's from one of the high schools.
Yeah. And that's pretty hard to set them all right and get them all feeling.
Well,
good.
I kind of enjoy that aspect of the work, really, is achieving what has to be achieved within the required budget.
Okay, let's have a listen to some bluegrass from David Grisman again. This is Bill Monroe's True Life Blues. Some classic bluegrass from David Grisman there.
Yeah, David Grisman was largely responsible for my returned interest in bluegrass music in the late 70s, 80s. I was wandering down the main street of Hamilton, and there in the specials bin outside a department store was this amazing looking record, which I bought on the spot, and it was David Grisman's Old and In the Way with David Grisman, Jerry Garcia on banjo, Peter Rowan wrote most of the songs on the album.
That's right.
Vassar Clements on fiddle.
Yes.
Fantastic bluegrass and just quirky enough for me, you know. I just went away and formed a bluegrass band immediately.
It's interesting, that you do have an affinity for different bands sometimes through just hearing them. I mean, our first music was Flat and Scruggs at Carnegie Hall and Vanderbilt, and then the Dillards and their live album. And so they were the first three bluegrass albums we had. And now I know that none of them were typical. There's no such thing as a typical bluegrass band in some ways. That True Life Blues is really what early bluegrass is all about. It's a song I've never played unless it's in a jam session. But then we got an album with a band, Earl Taylor, and Bluegrass Taylor Made was the name of the LP, and that defined bluegrass really for us, because just the way he did the songs, and he was a tenor singer, mandolin player, how they did the vocals, how they did everything, that I think we did about 8 songs off that album, you know, and that really defined our bluegrass. So I always have a soft spot for Earl Taylor, yet in some ways he's a little known musician.
For me, David Grisman was kind of a move away from traditional bluegrass, I guess you might call it, into, it was called Newgrass at the time, and then it kind of moved into diverging into jazz a little. But, you know, I guess everybody does that in their 20s and 30s, and then you come on back to the...
Well, that True Life Blues came off an album called Home Is Where the Heart Is, and he calls it a traditional bluegrass album, and it's basically him playing with all his friends, you know, in different tracks, and it's all traditional bluegrass, and he is a superb mandolin player. There's just no way around it. Well,
and he plays the same kind of mandolin as me.
Does he really?
Yeah, Gilchrist.
He's got an Australian Gilchrist too.
He uses a Gilchrist amongst many others.
Yes. What's your Gilchrist?
Mine was made in 1982, and it's just a F5 style Gilchrist.
Okay. How neat. I know Mike Compton plays Gilchrist too.
It's actually, once again, came back to Grisman, because there was an interview and you might remember, some of you out there, Frets magazine.
Yeah.
And there was an interview with David Grisman. What did he think of the state of mandolin building? And he rattled off 6 people who he thought were building fantastic mandolins, including Monteleone and Collins. Yeah. And Steve Gilchrist in Australia, and I thought, well, Australia, that's a whole lot closer.
So
I wrote him a letter, as you did in those days.
Yes.
And I shortly after that ordered a mandolin, and in 1982 or 3 or something I had my new mandolin. At the same time I had a mandolin that I'd built for myself, and initially the one that I'd built sounded better.
Right.
Which I gleefully informed Steve Gilchrist about. But after a couple of years, the one that I built kind of died, and the Gilchrist just got better and better and better, and now that's the one I use.
Great sounding mandolin.
Yeah.
You're listening to Back Porch Bluegrass with me, your host, Paul Trenwith, and my friend Keith McMillan in here, talking mandolins and bluegrass and fixing instruments and things like that. We're getting near the end of the program. I hope you've enjoyed it. I think we'll go out with another track off the Hamilton County Bluegrass Band album, These Old Hands, which has got Keith McMillan playing a mandolin tune called the New Campdown Races. Do you want to say something about this, Keith?
Yeah, New Campdown Races is another one of those mandolin tunes the mandolin players just love. It's partly because it's in an unusual key for a tune, B-flat, and it was written by Frank Wakefield.
Yes.
It just rips along. It's a great tune.
It's a wonderful tune. I mean, you think of it as being different, but in lots of ways
it somehow draws in classic
bluegrass.
It encapsulates.
Encapsulates, that's the word, classic bluegrass. And it's a fun tune to play. These days I always start it off not too fast.
We're thinking of recalling it not too fast.
Okay, here comes Hamilton County with New Campdown Races. Thanks very much for being with us, Keith. It's been real interesting.
I've loved it. Thank you very much, Paul.